Today's active missing persons case comes to us from Wrightsville, Pennsylvania. But before we get started, I want to make a request from a previous case. There is an organized two-day search for Andy Wagner occurring over this coming weekend. A request has been made for volunteers to help search for Andy in Oakland City, Indiana. Volunteers are asked to be at the New Lake Campground by 8 a.m. on Saturday, August 19th. If you're available to help with that search, please join the Where is Andy Facebook group and let them know that you'll be in attendance. And now, today's case. 19-year-old Caden Black had been living with a friend back in December of last year. He had a routine of visiting his father's house every Sunday, and he had just spoken with his mother about plans to visit her in Maryland for Christmas. Everything seemed perfectly normal. And then Caden simply vanished without a trace. He had deposited his entire paycheck into his bank account on Friday, and after his last phone ping from in or around his house at 9:28 a.m. on Sunday, no one has seen or heard from him. And his bank account remains untouched. I'm joined today by Caden's mother, Kara Patterson.
Caden is so funny. He's got kind of a dry sense of humor, but he's funny on the spot. He can make up like little sayings or jokes. Caden, you know, I have all these pictures on my phone from the previous Christmas where he took my phone and was just taking selfies with sunglasses on, with like everybody in the family draping over them on the couch, and like, you know, with my parents, with his siblings. He had a presence when he walked into a room that we miss. You know, he came in the house and he never said hi. He'd say, "Hey." Everybody who knows him, they just say how funny Caden is. Caden is super athletic. He was training to become a lightweight boxer. And he kept wanting me to go see him fight. And I just wouldn't do it because I didn't want to see if somebody punched my kid in the face.
Right.
But I mean, he was in high school. He was, you know, captain of the football team. He placed states in the high jump and in, I want to say, like either maybe the 2 or the 400 meter race. He was like first and second in two of those different things. He was just super into working out, taking care of himself, eating right. Not that he didn't cheat and eat junk food, because he would, but he was just very much about everybody, you know, should make better, you know, food choices and healthy choices, you know, live your best life type of thing.
So he was 19 years old last year, and he had graduated high school. If I understand right, you had, you and your ex and his father had split up years ago, and
yeah,
you live in Maryland. Dad lived in Pennsylvania.
Yes. I moved to, I used to live in Pennsylvania, right down the street. His father lived, we lived almost off of the same road. The friend's house, the Faust, who he was staying with, lived in between my old house and his father's house. I was offered a promotion at work, and I moved here. Caden was still in high school, so I had to move to Maryland for the position, and we did that, and Caden, you know, was living with me then. But he did miss Pennsylvania. He missed his friends in PA, and eventually he went back up there in 12th grade to finish school with his dad. I mean, he came to me, he said, "Mom, it's not you." I get it. I do get it. But I didn't want him to move back up there. I told him, I said, "You know, I just don't feel like it's good for you." You know, there were some things that he struggled with, and nothing big, but it was a small town. It wasn't really diverse, and the school he went to, things were kind of hard, I felt, for him. It was a lot of like second, third, fourth generation would be the quarterback. Even if somebody else was kind of better to be the quarterback, you know, this person went to high school with your grandmother and they're the coach, so you're the quarterback type of deal.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like he faced the same down here, but he just was insistent on going back to PA. He did. He moved in with his father. They had some disagreements, and he ended up then moving in with the Fausts, who he was friends with their son, Ethan.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the Fausts.
Okay.
But at this point, he was 18. When Caden went missing, he had just turned 19 December 10th.
Okay.
And went missing December 17th.
So was it after high school when he moved in with the Fausts?
Yes.
Okay. And then what was he? I know he was working for like a moving company, right?
Yes. He had only worked there for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He was having a hard time finding a job. And the moving company was close to there. And he was having some issues with his vehicle. So it was, you know, close to home for him to work there. But I know he didn't like that job.
Then we jumped to that weekend of December 17th. You had spoken to him shortly before. Was it that day
Thursday.
Or Thursday? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that conversation like?
We were talking about Christmas.
Uh-huh.
He was coming home to my house to spend the night Christmas Eve. We were just kind of talking about those plans. I was telling him, you know, I'm just trying to figure out where everybody's going to sleep because he has a sister who's married and her husband were coming for Christmas. And I said, I'll probably stick you in the room with Carter. I said, because Carter has a futon. Carter's his closest brother in age. They're 18 months apart.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of like, you know, he said that was good. I told him I got chipped beef because one of his favorite things is cream chipped beef homemade. And I said, yeah, I went to a butcher shop. I got chipped beef. So I said, I guess I'll be up cooking all morning Christmas. And we got off the phone. And that's the last time I ever talked to him. I worked Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And on Tuesday morning, my phone rang around 8 a.m. And it was Chris Faust asking me, did I know where Caden was? And I was like, I thought he was there. And he said, well, we just realized that no one has seen Caden since Saturday.
Was there any indication in that phone call that anything was wrong, anything was bothering him when you talked to him on Thursday?
No, but I will say he seemed a little off. Because when I was talking to him about who was going to be here, his older brother, Jordan, had just moved back home. And when Jordan moved back home, we actually bought him an RV. So we had bought an RV and had a hookup put outside so Jordan could have his own space. And when I said, well, you know, Jordan will be here because he lives here. And he's like, Jordan lives there? And I was like, yeah. I said, remember we just had this conversation. He was at the house maybe a week before. I said, we just had this conversation about us. We had bought him that camper because him and Carter were joking around like, oh, if Jordan's mouthy, Carter had just gotten a pickup truck. Carter's like, I'll just hook his camper up and take him down the road. Like they were joking about that. And Caden came up with the term. He was like, you just got a hook and book. And Caden was laughing so hard and holding his stomach and they were just dying over this. And it kind of struck me as odd that he forgot all of that. It was just kind of weird. I said, don't you remember you and Carter, you were talking about hook and book, that you were just going to hook up Jordan in the camper and take him on down the road? And then he was like, oh, yeah, yeah. So I don't know what that was about. I still think about that.
Did he drink at all or?
I know he smoked marijuana. I wouldn't think that he would have done anything heavier than that. And I've talked to a lot of people, like, did he start? Did he try something? To my knowledge, no one can tell me that he has. I didn't think that when I saw him. The last time I saw him, what stood out to me was he was definitely, you know, he was going to the gym every day. Mm-hmm. And you could definitely tell. I mean, and working at a moving company and lifting stuff, like his shoulders were very broad and he was definitely beefed up.
So let's jump into that weekend then. So you don't get the call till Tuesday, and that's when the Fausts realize it's kind of, you know, sounds like he's living with the whole family there. And then maybe that's the day people start talking like, wait, have you seen Caden? Have you? And then they realize, wait, he hasn't been around since Saturday.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, after they called me, we discussed, you know, filing a missing persons report. I do think we made some phone calls in there of, you know, calling dad. And when I talked to his dad, his father said, I've been trying to get a hold of Caden since Saturday night. He said, and the messages were left unread. I don't know. Maybe it was Saturday. Maybe it was Sunday. I think he saw Caden on Saturday, and Caden told him he was coming over on Sunday to take his dogs out to run. He had two large dogs, and Caden loved the dogs, and he would go and take the dogs out and run with them because he would say, oh, you know, my dad's got dogs and they need exercise.
Yeah.
And so my ex-husband said, you know, I left him messages. Caden had an iPhone. So he said, and they were left unread.
Are you saying they were left on read or left unread?
Left unread.
Unread. So he hadn't opened them. Yeah.
He hadn't even opened them. He said he tried to call him. It went to voicemail. And he said he then tried to call Chris Faust, didn't get a hold of him. So Monday morning, he repeated the same thing, trying to get a hold of Caden, sending him more messages. Still none of the messages had been read. And Tuesday morning is when Chris Faust called him back. So there's a little discrepancy in who realized Caden was missing, because Caden's father said he was contacting Chris Faust, trying to call and leaving text messages like, where's Caden? He was supposed to come to my house today, and that he didn't get a response.
So what does Chris say about that Sunday? So they say they saw him Saturday. His dad mm-hmm. said he saw him Saturday. Sunday, he's gone. And I think I had read that there was a ping on his phone that seemed to be at or near the Faust house on Sunday at 9:28 in the morning.
Right. The cell phone ping is interesting. I'm just going to go on the record and say this. I was told for a long time that cell phone ping was within 2 miles of the Faust home.
Mm-hmm.
I later found out there was a day Chris called and said, you know, they're searching my house and they have dogs. So I'm not really sure what they're looking for. They're saying Caden might have had a second cell phone. And my ex-husband called me and told me the same thing. And I said, Caden couldn't even afford his own cell phone. I don't know how he would have had a second cell phone. A month later, because I did talk to the police about it, and they just said that they were doing a more thorough search. A month later, I ended up talking to somebody at the DA's office who was working on the case. He's no longer on the case. He was promoted and we have someone new. But he did tell me the reason that they did that search was not to look for a second cell phone, but it was to look for Caden's cell phone, because they had finally gotten the exact location of the phone by looking into the apps. And the apps were connected to Wi-Fi when the phone died. And the Wi-Fi came back as the Faust's Wi-Fi at their house.
So at 9:28, his phone, and we're not using cell towers now. That was at 9:28, no. His phone was connected to the Wi-Fi at that house.
At that house. And that's Sunday morning. So if Caden didn't leave Sunday, because Chris was up all day and no one saw him Sunday, and Chris was up since 6 a.m. and no one saw him Monday, where was the phone? Because the phone was never retrieved. And the dogs that went in, I never knew that this was possible, but there are dogs that are trained to sniff for electronic devices.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. But I mean, think about it. I guess electronics could be a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
So it probably along those lines. And their house is very well kept.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of nothing out of place. So, and it's small. So I don't know, like, how did that happen?
So just to clarify this, because we talked a little bit off the record, so I want to make sure we get this. From what Chris told you, he woke up. That's his friend's dad. He woke up at about 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Yes.
And came out and never saw Caden that day.
Correct.
We know from Caden's phone that at 9:28, he was still, or his phone at least, was still there connected.
Yep.
And then nobody saw him until after that. Now, You said he had a car that had problems. When he is his car gone as well?
No.
So when they realize, I'm processing all this as we're talking, but
I understand.
So he's not there from Saturday till Tuesday.
Correct.
And Tuesday is the day they figure out that he's missing. They contact you and ask you if you've seen him. But his car had been there the entire time.
His car had been there. And while he was having issues with his car, the car was running. I gave him a phone number. And it was Maryland inspected. So when it went to PA, I guess they found something. Him and Kurt's spouse worked on that forerunner together. But then after they worked on it, the forerunner didn't start. So it had an appointment that following Tuesday, the Tuesday after Chris had called me. They had had an appointment set up for it to go to a service center. In the meantime, Chris was allowing Caden to use his car because they had several vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So Caden would use Chris's car to go to work. So I would say the fact that Chris's car was there on Monday should have been the indicator when Caden was supposed to be at work.
Right, because that was one of the first things. Is he was supposed to be to work Monday. He doesn't show up, and his work is wondering where he's at now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no cars missing.
Nope.
Okay, that's super interesting. In the search for him, now we're going on, what's it, 8 months now. What were his bank records like? I think I had read that he had deposited his check into his account.
He did. Chris found in his car, Chris Faust's car, Caden's ID, mm-hmm. paperclip to a deposit slip from the bank on December 16th, and he deposited his whole paycheck with the exception of $5. And when I called his phone records, the gym that he would go boxing at with Open Gym, he always had to pay $5 and it was cash.
Mm-hmm.
And his bank record or his phone record showed he had called the gym on Saturday. And I actually talked to the owner of the gym and he said, yeah, Caden called, but it was like 6:30 when he called and Open Gym closes at 7. And Caden was like, oh man, I'm not going to be able to make it. So my assumption is he kept the $5 to go to the gym.
Right.
They did subpoena his account and it hasn't been touched. His bank card hasn't been used.
Did he have any other resource, any other money other than that paycheck?
I don't believe that he did. The police say that his employer has been known to pay some cash and some on a paycheck.
Uh-huh.
But even if it was, I mean, his paychecks weren't even a lot of money. So he wasn't making a ton of money working there. I mean, I want to say maybe $12 to $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get paid for the car rides. They only got paid when they got to a job. And then when they finished, that was, you know, their pay time.
So when he disappeared, he had that little bit of money in the bank that hadn't been touched. There's been no phone activity since 9:28 a.m. on Sunday. Now, was that him using the phone? Or was that just someone like calling him or trying to get?
It was just that they found that when the phone died, it was connected to their Wi-Fi.
Okay. And they were able to figure that out without having the physical phone.
Yeah, because they made a clone of his phone with apps,
uh-huh.
like the apps that he had, and they were able to get those open and unlocked, and they were able to see the last thing that they were connected to and what time those apps all shut down. And it was the exact time that the phone shut down.
At 9:28 a.m., he's connected to the Wi-Fi at the house. Did his father, when he talked to him or saw him on Saturday, did he say that if he sensed there was anything wrong or if there was any issues in that conversation?
No. He said that, you know, it was a good conversation. Caden came down, saw the dog, and was like, yeah, I'll be back on Sunday.
So he's missing and has essentially no resources, $5, maybe a little bit of cash, no phone, no car. He's left without his. Now, they found his ID in the car.
Yep.
But is his wallet been found?
No. His wallet and his bank card have not been found.
And the bank card has not been used?
No.
No. Did he have any credit cards or anything, or was it just the debit card?
Just the debit card.
So what has been done in the search efforts? It sounds like the police are at least actively involved in trying to help you find him.
They are, and they have been. You know, I've been back and forth with them. They haven't been very happy with me. You know, I wish they would have searched for him right away. I wish they would have brought in dogs day one, day two, to see if there was a scent leaving that house, or a cadaver dog to see if there was a hit at that house. In the beginning, I really believed they were going to do a search. When Caden disappeared, it was very cold outside. I mean, very cold. Mm-hmm. I remember this because we actually had like a pipe freeze inside of our house. And that's never happened before. And then after it was very cold, it warmed up and it was unseasonably warm and everything was just muddy. And so the first part of the conversation was they couldn't search right then because of all of the ice outside. You know, when the weather breaks, I believed that they were going to search. And then after the weather broke, it was too wet. It was too muddy. You know, that whatever scent or trail would have been there, it would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So there was never a search done with dogs in the beginning. They did bring dogs to the house. They did take dogs to the river at a certain point, but it was never done right away.
Do you know how long it was before they did that?
Probably 3 to 4 weeks. I can't honestly say that I remember exactly.
But a little bit of time had passed before they...
It had been some time.
Did they take dogs to the house other than the self... Like, did they take cadaver dogs ever to the house or any kind of search dogs
to
the house?
I don't believe a cadaver dog has ever gone to the house. I do know the dogs that I know of that went to the house was when they were looking for the cell phone.
If they searched bodies of water, searched anything like that?
So they did do a search on the banks of a river. They did do a drone search. That area is so rural, so much farmland, so many trees. I was kind of skeptical about the drone search, but with that time of year, there weren't leaves on most of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So they did do a lot of stuff where they had other agencies who were doing training exercises, like with the drone team. So they used Caden's case to do those training exercises and were able to get more, I guess, more searching done through, you know, with the drones. I know a psychic recently contacted my ex-husband, and I believe her son maybe played basketball with Caden when he was younger. And she had a horrific story that she told him, that Caden was killed, he was dismembered, his body was put in the river. And she was saying that he's come to her in her dreams, and that this is this area on this map. And he called me, he was so upset, and he was like, you know, you're right. Because I told him before that I don't think Caden's alive. I just don't. And he's been saying, I don't have that feeling. He's going to turn up. And I'm like, why would he do this? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Him and his brother, Carter, are 18 months apart. They are so close. They were on the phone every day. I mean, several times a day, like this, FaceTime, you know, always FaceTiming each other, talking to each other. Like, if he was mad at me for some unknown reason, if he was mad at his father for some unknown reason, why would he do that to Carter? Like, it doesn't make sense. It just, and if he was just going to disappear, wouldn't he take his stuff? Or wouldn't he wait until his car was fixed? Or wouldn't he take his money out of the bank? But this, going off of this psychic lead and what she said and where his body was supposed to be stuck, I didn't really believe it. I know that river a little bit. When we lived up there, we had a boat. And I think that someone who doesn't know the river doesn't understand the dam system. But the dams don't float over. They float under.
Mm-hmm. They have like turbines down in there. So you can't really go in your boat and go over the dam. So yeah. I don't know how a body would go over the dam. And it would have had to go over two dams. And the area where she said he was put in the water is very shallow. It's so shallow, you could probably kind of walk across the river there. You can't boat there. And the police actually had knew a diving school and had the diving school go there and do a diving search just last week where this lady said, and this was just somebody who was a psychic. So they are, you know, so they did do that. I feel like they're kind of doing anything at this point.
In one of the articles I was just reading, it sounded like, I think it was from last month, but the police definitely sounded almost desperate. In fact, I think in the article it said, you know, they're not asking anymore at this point. They're begging anyone to come forward with any information because they're baffled. Have there been any, other than the psychic, have there been any tips, any leads, anyone that is given any information that gives any indication of what happened?
Nothing. There have been some false sightings, and they've definitely been just false sightings. The police have gotten information back pretty quickly. 2 weeks ago, somebody thought they saw him in Philadelphia. The guy looked literally nothing like Caden. It's nothing. And that's what the chief said. He said, you know, when we did this press conference, he felt like we were just going to be inundated with all these leads. He said there was nothing.
I read, too, that they said that, I guess they didn't come out and say they don't suspect foul play, but they said they have nothing indicating to them there's foul play. Do you know, have they looked in, have they pursued this investigation with the idea that it could be foul play?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely questioned some people that Caden worked with several times. And I know that Chris Faust has been very cooperative. And they've spoke with him, and they've done several searches on the house. I think the first two searches were Chris saying, kind of come in and see his room, and they just checked his room. Later, they did search a full search of the house. Then they did the search for the cell phone of the house. So, I mean, my conversation with Chief Thomas just a few days ago was he kind of believes that something had to have happened to him, too, was my take on it. You know, he said, I don't know if he got hit. He went out for a run because Caden did do that. It drove me crazy. If he couldn't sleep or if he, you know, was feeling antsy, he would just go out and run. Like he would jog. Caden rode his bike one day, 53 miles just to do it. But he would go run and he would do it at night. So, you know, if he went out on a Saturday night with somebody out drinking and driving, they hit him. Chief said, you know, threw him in the back of their truck and took home and took him out into the woods somewhere. I thought of that immediately when Caden was missing. That was one of the first things that I thought of because I've never had that concern with any of my other children. None of my other kids just leave and go out for a run and don't say, hey, I'm leaving and going for a run. And I would say, Caden, like something is going to happen to you. Like you can't just leave and go out running and no one knows where you are. And he did it here. He called me at 3 o'clock in the morning one time and was like, hey, Mom, I went for a run. Can you come pick me up? I mean, I'm in bed and I have to work the next morning. And I'm like, you're not in your room asleep? I'm like, you can't do that.
But when he would do that, I would assume that he would take his phone with him. If for no other reason to listen to music or something while he's out running.
Yeah.
It would seem to me that would be odd that if he had taken off and gone for a run or something that his phone would have been connected to the Wi-Fi the next morning. What has, if anything, his friend, because it was his friend Ethan, is there kind of the reason why he was living in that house? Did Ethan mm-hmm. or Chris Faust or any of those people say that they had any indication that anything was wrong, that he may be leaving or anything like that?
No, they said that he seemed different since he had started working at the moving company. Chris Faust said, I think he's smoking weed. I feel like Caden has always kind of smoked weed on and off.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't personally smoke weed. Yeah, I tried it in high school. It doesn't do a thing for me, but I don't know that I see it as a big deal. I mean, I think it's maybe even legal now in Maryland. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. So what is being done now? And is there anything that our listeners, you know, we haven't talked a whole lot about our, you know, kind of our model is it's a crowdsourcing model. We have people all over the country that are, and we're doing these cases for, you know, people that are maybe local to the area that might be able to help. Are there any searches being organized where you might need volunteers, or what can people do to help right now?
I would say just keep sharing his picture and keep his picture fresh. The problem with doing a search on foot was what I learned in the beginning, because that's what I wanted. I wanted a search. I had all these people saying they would come and search, because it's so rural and there's so much land and there's so many different people owning property. They're afraid, you know, I mean, a lot of people have guns. So the police were like, you know, we could really be creating a mess if, you know, somebody comes out and they see somebody walking in their woods, or they see, you know, somebody in a field. So at this point, I am going to offer a reward.
Okay.
I'm going to put this on Facebook today, but I'm offering a $5,000 reward for the person who for someone who has a tip that leads to where Caden is, good or bad. But it can't be an anonymous tip, because in order to get the money, they're going to have to call Lower Windsor police and they're going to have to give the tip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that can generate something. I wanted to do this for a while. I've had the money to do this. But in the beginning, when Caden went missing, I was actually getting people, I had put my phone number out there, and I was getting text messages and phone calls for ransom. I don't believe from this country. You know, they come at like 2-3 in the morning. I have your son. I'm going to kill him if you don't send me $10,000. I did turn it all over to the police. They were all Google-generated phone numbers, so nothing could be found. So the Center for the National Center for Missing Children has wanted me to wait on doing this reward. The detective I recently spoke with at the DA's office said now would probably be a good time to do it.
Okay.
And to some of the people in that area, people who worked at that moving company, I mean, if they know something, maybe it could be motivating.
Okay. Well, make sure you get all of that information to me before Sunday, because I'll put that out. And one thing that our listeners can do for sure is to share that far and wide all around, particularly anybody that lives in that area in Pennsylvania, that the reward is out there for $5,000, and their contact would still be through the Lower Windsor. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe because you have experience. I mean, is there a chance he has amnesia and he doesn't know? Does that ever happen? Is that a real thing?
I don't know. I mean, it is a real thing. But I don't know. You know, it would seem like, I don't know. It would seem to me like there someone would have seen him. Someone would see, you know, someone with amnesia wandering into their house or wandering somewhere would be like, I found this person.
I have so many different theories on things that could have happened. Like, what if he smoked weed, went to somebody's house, got it that night, smoked it, and it was laced with something, say fentanyl, say meth, something, and he responded crazy to it. And he's a strong kid. He's a fighter. And he got beat up and taken and dropped off somewhere. I mean, is that crazy? I mean, this is all I do.
No, I don't think it is. And I don't know how, like that's all I would be doing, Kara, honestly, is just trying to think of every possible scenario. Because for what I've seen you, what you've said to me, what I've seen you quoted is the exact way I feel about this. This is insane. People don't just vanish. They don't just disappear.
Right. Somebody knows something. Somebody does. There is at least one person that knows something. I just know it. There has to be. If he did leave on his own, he didn't walk forever. Somebody picked him up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If somebody did something to him, they know they did something to him. If somebody hit him with a car, they know they hit it. Like, somebody knows. There is at least one person who knows what happens to my son.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of createdintandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kaywood Yomnick, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod, and I can be found on social media @BobRuffTruth. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.